The garrison wall hadn't proved difficult for Dean. The knotted rope he'd brought made it easy. But Calgary had struggled so much, he was sure they were going to get caught. From there, they made the leap to the dormitory roof and hunkered down.
I think I hurt my leg.
Calgary, you wanted to see a naked girl tonight. Or at least find out if she is naked. Now shut up before you wake up everybody.
Though Dean thought that wasn't too likely so far. One thing that Dean had found true, people inside the school's heavy walls slept more soundly than he'd ever have thought about doing when he was with his dad. At school, it was a totally different way of living.
We're pretty close to her, aren't we?
Ever notice that vanilla scent she wears?
I've never been that close.
Trust me, she wears it. Get your nose open a little bit and you'll probably be smelling it in the next few minutes. Then we'll find out if vanilla scent is the only thing she wears at night.
Dean grinned. Finding Phaedra was no longer just for Calgary and the thrill of doing something he wasn't supposed to. There were mysteries to be solved that he hadn't even known he was interested in. Leaning over the eaves, Dean counted windows. When he found the fifth one, he scooted across the rooftop on his stomach, using his fingers and toes.
Is that her room?
It's her room.
Hauling himself over the edge, Dean looked into Phaedra Lemon's bedroom. The room was small, holding only two beds, a chest of drawers, and a trunk at the foot of each bed. There were fewer girls than boys. In the moonlight slanting through the window, Phaedra Lemon's long hair shone like spun gold, spread out on her pillow. She slept with a blanket pulled to her shoulder and her fist under her chin. At 15, she had curves under that blanket. She also had her mouth open, innocent-like. That one detail almost made Dean feel guilty enough to shuck the whole adventure and go back to his room.
Can you see anything?
Dean swiveled his head, finding the other boy hanging off the eaves almost as far as he was. Calgary's face was so suffused with blood, it looked like a melon about to burst.
I see that she's sleeping under a blanket. Stay here.
Dean gripped the eaves with his hands as he turned himself over. The ledge out in front of the window was no more than 3 or 4 inches, barely enough for him to put the ends of his shoes on. He managed, and soon found it would hold his weight.
What are you doing? You're going to get caught!
Only if you don't shut your mouth!
Quiet as he could be, Dean pressed his fingers against the window pane and pushed up. The window slid easily, only having a few rough spots. Nicholas Brody made sure that craftsmanship went into every aspect of his school. Thinking about the old headmaster was troubling to Dean, because it was sort of betraying the trust the man had placed in him by accepting his enrollment. But seeing Phaedra lying there under that blanket, all curvy and unaware, numbed the guilty pangs. Light-footed and sure as a cat, he crept into the room. He glanced at the other bed and saw another girl sleeping there. He knew her too, but he couldn't remember her name. He didn't even care. He moved closer to Phaedra's bed, eyes running along the womanly body under the lightweight lavender blanket. At least it looked lavender in the moonlight. She smelled of vanilla, too, just as he knew she would. Gently, Dean reached out for the edge of the blanket, took it between his finger and thumb, and began to pull it down. He hadn't done more than reveal one bare shoulder when he noticed that Phaedra Lemon's eyes were open and she was staring right at him. Figuring she was going to scream, Dean dropped a hand to her face and covered her mouth, wondering what had driven him to be stupid enough to get caught in her bedroom.
Christy!
Ryan spotted Doc leaning down into a hole in the ground. Nearly knocked to his feet, Ryan regained his balance and raced toward Doc. He threw himself down, skidding across a boulder and shaving skin from both palms as he slid in place next to Doc at the hole in the ground.
Where's Christy?
There!
Squinting his eye, Ryan peered into the fissure. It was dark inside, but he could just make out the dying embers of a torch as it skittered over the side of another widening crack in the earth. For an instant, the torch flared to new life, no longer battered by the stones it rolled across. In the sudden light, Ryan saw Christy as the wreckage of a helicopter emerged from the cracking stone wall above her. Christy struggled to maintain a grip. Then the torch disappeared into the yawning abyss below. Everything went dark.
Hang on, Christy!
Ryan glanced over his shoulder and saw that JB was already tying a rope around an outcrop nearly 6 feet from the lip of the fissure. Doc, his face pale and drawn, gazed back down into the dark hole.
I volunteered to go down in her stead. I truly did, but she would have none of it. I am very sorry, friend Ryan.
She's not dead yet, Doc. Jack, get that light shining into that hole. I need to see.
Jack quickly moved into position. The flashlight came on with a burst of incandescence as he pointed it into the fissure. Ryan grabbed the free end of the rope.
Help's coming, Christy! JB, I'm gonna need 30 feet of rope beyond the lip.
50-foot rope, that's gonna cut it close.
Glover, give it up! I can't make it! There's no sense in losing both of us.
Working the end of the rope around his boots, Ryan watched as the earth crumbled under Christy's hands. She lost her grip, and for a second he thought it might be the end of her. But she made it back up, just in time for the helicopter to shudder and slide closer.
Hold on, damn it!
Ryan cinched the rope around both boots, just above the ankles. There was no time to try a controlled hand-over-hand descent. He peered over the edge, then rolled down to hang from his hands. The rope dangled in a loose coil between his tied feet, looping back up and out of sight. He was still 20 feet from Christy, another 10 in horizontal distance.
I can't let you do it! I'll let go before I let you get killed, too!
Hell, that won't stop me. You'd just be making it harder.
I don't want you to die.
I'm not gonna die, and I'm not gonna let you die either.
Tears glinted in Christy's eyes as she watched Ryan hang from the rocky lip above her. Her arms shook from the effort of hanging on, the muscles burning as they writhed under her skin. If she'd only fallen before Ryan had reached her, she thought, he wouldn't be here putting his life on the line.
You look at me. We've been through too many things, me and you, for you to just give up on me now.
The fissure behind her shook again, opening another 3 or 4 feet. The helicopter finally shrugged itself free of its subterranean tomb and came skidding at her. There was nothing she could do to avoid it. The aircraft gained speed, sparks jumping out from under it as the metal skin scraped across stone. Ryan leapt from his hold on the fissure's edge. Illuminated from above and behind by the flashlight Jack held, he skimmed across the hard rock, leading down to Christy. Her face was turned from him, focusing on the approaching bulk of the wrecked helicopter. The skeleton, dressed in rags, sitting in the cockpit, jumped and jerked behind the controls, looking as though it had come to life and was piloting the wreckage of his craft with insane glee. The plexiglass nose slid straight at Christy. Ryan hit the steep incline more than 8 feet from her. His stomach lurched inside him when he saw that he was going to reach her too late. Forgetting the rope around his ankles, he tried to push himself up and run. Unable to, he dug his boots in and leapt forward, skidding down the tilted rock, trying to navigate an interception path using his hands, ignoring the pain that was inflicted. Rock and dirt came shooting after him, overtaking him, swirling up inside his mouth, nose, and eye. He blinked, closing on Christy. But the helicopter was nearer. She took a final look at him, and bulldozed by the helicopter, went over the side.
Christy!
Ryan watched as Christy fell, captured in the beam of the flashlight Jack held. Heaving himself over the side, Ryan plunged into the abyss after her. Hot sulfuric fumes pressed into his face, burning his nose and eye. He spotted Christy ahead of him, on the other side of the helicopter. Her eyes were still focused on him. Ryan prayed the rope wouldn't come up short. In her desperation, Christy grabbed the helicopter as it tipped over the ledge. She got one hand around a helicopter skid. For a moment, despite the piles of rock and sand shoving up behind it, the aircraft wedged in the slowly expanding crevasse. Before it fell, Ryan was there. He wrapped his arms around Christy, pulling her into him. She let go of the skid and clung to him, her sentient hair coiling protectively around her scalp. The rope kept playing out, and they fell past the fissure's edge. He reached around and hooked his fingers in the thick leather belt at her back.
Ryan!
It's okay.
Just as he was beginning to think something had gone wrong, and JB hadn't gotten his knots tight enough, the rope yanked up fast around Ryan's boots.
No!
The force bruised his ankles despite the leather, and despite the elasticity of the nylon weave, and the rope felt as if it had cut into his flesh. They came to a sudden, jolting stop. While the rope held him, giving enough to keep his legs from popping out of his knee or hip joints, he was the only thing holding on to Christy. His legs, his back, and his arms and shoulders burned with the strain. Before he could recover, the helicopter was on them, batting them aside like a piñata as it nosedived into the abyss. An instant later, they were slammed against the side of the fissure. The rough rock bit into Ryan's back, but he didn't think there were any skin abrasions, since the dead man's coat provided padding. He bounced a couple of times, twisting along the rope's trajectories, swapping sides with Christy, then came to a rest against the underside of the second fissure. Ryan kept his arms locked tight. Christy sagged in his arms, not quite limp.
Fireblast. Christy?
Here, lover. I'm right here.
Don't let go. Don't know how much I can trust my arms.
Ryan!
We're here! Haul us in! Be careful!
Christy shifted her grip, grabbing fistfuls of Ryan's coat and putting some of her weight on the garment instead of in his arms.
Thank you. I thought I was dead and done for sure.
Not as long as there's a breath left in me, and I can see a way clear.
Phaedra bit Dean's hand.
Shit! Stop that!
He yanked her gold hair from behind to turn her face up to his. The vanilla smell of her swarmed around him and clouded his mind as he covered her body with his. Twisting in the bed, she tried to escape him. Dean was all too aware of the soft flesh just on the other side of the lavender blanket, almost trapped in some tantalizing fashion beneath his body. He threw a leg over her, trying to keep her from squirming off the bed. Without warning, she brought a small hand out from under the blanket and punched him in the nose. Dean sat back and grabbed his nose. It hurt like hell. He held out his free hand to ward off another blow. He didn't know which hurt worse, his bitten hand or his nose.
Stop! I'm sorry!
She gripped the blanket with one hand and kept it tucked under her chin, maintained a fist poised to strike, and scooted away from him.
Dean?
Damn, that hurt.
Quiet, you jackass! You'll wake Bitha!
Dean looked at her, scrunched up against the headboard as if she were afraid he was going to jump at her again. He felt bad about that.
I didn't mean to scare you.
What did you think you were going to do creeping around in my room like that? What the hell are you doing here?
Because she was turned to face him, Dean knew Phaedra didn't see Calgary Ventnor hanging upside down from the eaves.
I came to see you.
Me? Why?
I don't know.
Shh!
They both glanced at Bitha, who slept on. Dean swiveled his head back to Phaedra, gazing at her lips, and wondering why he hadn't noticed how ripe and full they looked. The scent of vanilla filled his nostrils, and he knew that he'd never forget it.
Don't sit there smiling.
Was I smiling?
You still are. Usually you've got a bored look on your face. But you don't look bored now.
Dean tried not to let his gaze linger too long on the rounded breast, almost visible under the lavender blanket. He'd never known lavender could be so attractive either. Phaedra actually smiled.
I've got to go.
You just got here.
This isn't exactly a visit.
You can't go.
Look, you might have surprised me with that punch to the nose because I wasn't expecting it. But there's no way you can keep me from going.
I can scream.
With the way the light was hitting her, Dean thought he could see the outline of one pointy nipple jutting out from her breast. Tonight, that one little bump of flesh intrigued him more than all the naked breasts he'd ever seen.
Why would you scream?
Why not?
Frustrated, Dean sat on the edge of the bed, feeling his sore nose.
You're confusing.
I'll let you go if you'll tell me why you were here.
Dean decided that he was doomed for sure.
I came to find out something.
What?
His face felt hot again, and electricity rippled through his groin as he looked at that little nubbin of flesh poking at the lavender blanket. Glancing over Phaedra's shoulder, he looked at Calgary hanging there like some kind of stupid bat. Silently, Dean wished the boy's head would explode. During the confusion of all the flying bloody matter and what little brains Calgary actually had, judging from tonight's little adventure, Dean was certain he could make an escape.
I heard that you slept naked.
Dean watched her. There, he'd said it. She looked at him, her mouth going open, but no sounds coming out, as if she were a fish drowning in the air. She worked her jaw a few times. Dean wondered if he had time to make a dash for the window before she started yelling, or hitting.
You came up here to look at me naked?
Her face went crimson, blushing dark in the shadows gathered in the room. Her body didn't move enough to give a hint of what she was about to do. JB, Doc, Mildred, and Jack pulled Ryan and Christy up, keeping the tension on the line steady, moving them along. They scraped along the fissure wall until they were raised above it. With the line unanchored, they twirled out of control until they reached the lip of the top fissure. JB grabbed Christy's arm and helped her onto solid ground. Doc offered Ryan his hand and helped him over. Mildred pulled out a knife and cut the rope from Ryan's ankles.
Truly, my dear Ryan, that was one of the most outstanding exercises in courageous gallantry that these old eyes have ever beheld.
Speak for yourself, Doc. I nearly wet my pants when I saw both of them go over the edge.
Ryan kicked out of the cut rope, gritting his teeth against the pain in his ankles, legs, and back. Everything still seemed to move when he wanted it to, which was a good sign.
Phew. Thought you lost for sure. Glad you're not.
Ryan nodded and forced himself to his feet. A harsh, spitting bolt of snake-tongued lightning suddenly fried the sky above them, leaving the harsh, acrid smell of ozone behind.
Raiders will probably hole up in this if they're smart.
They'll probably be thinking we'll be doing the same thing.
I think maybe a little farther on, we could find a better place to set up that tent Jack found. I know it looks like we got most of them, but I think maybe there's more than we thought, the way they keep coming. Distance is a weapon for us right now, and we'd best use it.
Ryan shrugged on his pack, feeling the deeper pain of his ordeal hovering around him, warded off by the adrenaline still pumping through his system.
I'm gonna walk until I find a place safe enough, or I can't walk anymore. Anything else would be double stoop. Jack, which way?
Ahead.
Ryan glanced in the direction the teenager pointed to and nodded. Turning up the collar of his coat, he turned back to the group.
You got point, Jack.
The albino nodded and vanished into the snow flurries within a half dozen steps.
JB, you're walking drag.
The armorer dropped out of the single-file line forming behind Ryan.
Doc, you're the man next to him. Christy and Mildred, after me.
Ryan moved on out, with the others following. He forced himself up the slight incline already covered with a layer of snow, his stire at the ready. Dean was almost certain Phaedra had broken his nose this time. Red dots exploded in his vision. He put both hands in front of him to ward off another blow. The bed shifted as Phaedra drew back her arm.
You triple stoop muty jackass! You bastard pervert! Your mother probably lay with the ugliest, foulest boar she could find to sire you! I hate you! I'm going to scratch your eyes out! Then I'm going to stomp them into jelly, put them into pieces of sourdough bread, and give them to the rats!
Stop it!
You're insufferable! I can't believe I let you sit on my bed!
You didn't let me. I slipped in here and I let myself.
The blanket had dropped even farther, to where the material clung only by the nubbin of her nipple to protect the last shreds of her modesty. Dean's breath felt thick in his throat. Calgary Ventnor mouthed Dean's name in wide pantomime. The boy slipped, a white look of terror crossing his animated and blood-filled features. For a moment, Dean thought Calgary was going to fall, and had mixed feelings about the other boy's survival. He kept his hands around Phaedra's wrists and forced her back on the bed, where she couldn't gain enough leverage to break free. One leg coiled around his waist in an effort to move out from beneath him. Dean swallowed hard, amazed at how all the air seemed to have gone from the room.
Sick bastard!
No. Dean couldn't believe no one was coming to beat down the bedroom door. In a desperate move to shut up any more outbursts from the girl, he put his mouth over hers. It wasn't a kiss. It was just a seal of flesh against flesh. Phaedra fought hard for a moment or two. Then, all the fight drained from her. Without warning, her lips sought Dean's. Thinking maybe it was a ploy designed to win his confidence, Dean tried to keep his mouth closed, but he just wasn't able to keep his lips together. Then he wasn't able to keep his teeth together as Phaedra's tongue invaded his mouth. He felt as if he were on fire, suddenly swollen up too big to fit inside his own skin. Not just in his crotch, but all over. At length, Phaedra broke off the kiss and lay quietly under him, her eyes closed. When she opened them, she stared, contrite.
You're bleeding. Did I do that?
I don't see anybody else who's been hitting me.
Dean gazed down at her, taking in the sight of the creamy flesh, open for his inspection. He looked at her breast, the nipple standing proudly, flushed with blood and dark against the strawberry areole.
You're pretty.
Thank you.
He looked back into her face, noting that she didn't act embarrassed at all with his looking.
You kiss good, too.
Thank you again. You kiss pretty good yourself.
He shifted on her, knowing she had to be noticing how excited he was against her leg, feeling kind of embarrassed about that himself. His dad had mentioned such things were natural. Otherwise, what would bring men and women together long enough, no matter what the hardship or circumstance, to bring babies into the world? Of course, his dad had also said that bringing babies into the world generally wasn't on most people's minds at those times.
Have you been kissed before, Dean?
Sure.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
Her face darkened and her pretty mouth turned down.
But not as much as this time.
Why didn't you like it as much as this time?
Dean wished he had more time to think. Hell, he wished he didn't feel so confused by everything his body was telling him that he could think. Telling her that he didn't know didn't sound like a good move.
It was you.
You know, Dean Cotter, looking at you all raw-boned and unkempt sometimes and hearing about how you fought so dirty out on the school ground, I didn't think you'd be such a romantic.
Dean raised his eyebrows. He hoped Jack never heard about this, because he'd never live it down.
If you'll let go of my wrists, maybe I can make your nose feel better. I can at least clean it up.
Gingerly, Dean released her, pushing himself back. Phaedrus started to sit up, unmindful that the blanket had gathered at her waist, revealing her breasts to him. She grinned.
Can't believe we didn't wake somebody up with all that noise.
Dean couldn't either. He was also aware that Calgary had edged down farther on the eaves.
Maybe you need to keep covered up.
Why? You embarrassed? After all, it was you coming stealing into my bedroom.
Over Phaedra's shoulder, Dean watched Calgary suddenly come loose from the eaves and fall.
Shit!
Dean got up and went to the window, wondering if Cal had accidentally killed himself. Phaedra yanked the blanket around herself.
What was that?
Dean stuck his head out the window and peered down. Calgary was squirming around, holding his leg. Phaedra shoved her head through the window beside Dean.
That's Calgary Ventnor!
Yeah.
Dean wondered how the hell he was going to explain the other boy's presence. Telling Phaedra that the jaunt into her bedroom had been at Calgary's instigation seemed the same as slitting his wrists, the long way. But he couldn't think. Not the way his head was hurting, and with the vanilla scent of Phaedra standing so close, coming into his swollen nose with every breath.
Calgary must have followed you up here.
That's probably it.
He's a pervert. He's been caught 2-3 times peeking through holes he's carved through the girls' shower room.
Phaedra?
They turned back to the room together to see Bitha sitting up in her bed. Her eyes widened as they locked on Dean.
Ah! It's a boy!
Phaedra grabbed Dean's arm and pushed him at the window.
Get out! If they don't catch you, they won't know who you are! Bitha can't see shit without her glasses. If you don't get caught, neither one of us has to explain what you are doing here.
That's a long way down.
Yes, well, Calgary Ventnor is still alive, isn't he? If he can make the jump, so can you.
Hey, girls are right in there.
Dean glanced at the door, one leg over the window frame and barely finding purchase on the narrow board below. Bitha had pulled the covers over her head. Phaedra put her shoulder against Dean with more force than he'd expected.
Whoa!
Off balance and hanging precariously, Dean had no chance to keep his grip. He plummeted, waving his arms wildly in an attempt not to land on Calgary. An instant before he hit the ground, he managed to get his feet under him. On impact, he bent his legs, went forward into a roll, and came up on his feet, none the worse for wear. Peering up, he saw yellow light invade the bedroom behind Phaedra.
Sorry!
Dean, help me. I think I broke my leg.
You're lucky you didn't break your bastard neck, you stoop.
Dean took the other boy's hand and hauled him up. They were drawing entirely too much unwanted attention. He pulled the boy along as fast as he could, dodging between the girls' quarters and the stable. Dean dragged Calgary headlong into the corral fence and through an open gate, pulling him down flat to the earth. It had rained a couple days earlier, so the ground was still soft in most places. The flickering torchlight from one of the school's set guards on the ground illuminated the rails, but didn't reach far into the muddy areas beyond. With no warning, a light but firm hand shoved against Dean's shoulder. Dean came around quick, curling up and ready to spring to his feet, but the hand shifted from his shoulder to the center of his chest. A strong push sent Dean tumbling to his ass again.
Don't! Damn kid, you're already in it up to your neck.
Peering through the gloom, Dean recognized Jake, The Sekhmet had been the first school resident Dean had met.
I'm sitting.
Jake glared down at him, then looked at Calgary and back again. He wore a battered brimmed hat, a gray work shirt, and blue jeans tucked into scarred work boots that had never seen an honest day of rest. The way he held the Browning 71 rifle in his hand, it looked as if flesh, bone, and steel never parted company.
That you up in the girls' dorm?
No.
Yes, sir.
He went in.
Calgary pointed at Dean with one hand and tried to brush mud and horseshit off with the other. Jake pinned him with his gaze.
You was just hanging around on the rooftop?
Calgary looked at his feet. Jake canted the rifle over his shoulder and pushed his hat back with a gnarled thumb. He looked at Dean, his face stern, but his eyes full of mischief.
I ain't gonna ask you what you was doing inside that dorm, but Brody, he's gonna want to know. You might want to think on that.
Yes, sir.
Let's go. You boys caused enough of a stir tonight.
Dean got up and followed the sec man, knowing he'd probably just blown every chance he had of finishing out the term at the school. His dad was going to be real disappointed. After finally finding a pass through the mountains, the companions set up a camp while Ryan and Jack checked their perimeter. The tent was in place when they returned. Ryan smelled the aroma of a freshly opened self-heat even before they'd finished the descent. JB sat hunkered down with his back against a wall, a little up from the rounded dome of the tent. From his position, he could see over the tent and all approach paths for at least 50 yards in any direction. The armorer held a steaming self-heat in his hands, eating slowly so he could savor the warmth of the container for a bit, too. Christy emerged from the tent and handed Ryan a self-heat.
Here, love.
Ryan took the container gratefully. JB looked over at him.
Go on inside the tent. I've got this watch.
Thanks. Wake me in an hour and a half. I'll take that one.
Ryan entered the tent, followed by Jack, Mildred, and Christy, who zipped the flap closed again.
Ooh, not much room, but it does take a body out of that wind.
Ryan stretched out as much as he was able. The tent wasn't very big, so they were all touching one another. He finished the stew and put the container aside, laying his head on his arm. His eye drifted closed when he felt Christy's hand on his brow. Her fingers felt soft across the areas that weren't nerve-damaged from the injuries he'd taken over the years. Moments later, he fell asleep.
Wake up!
Ryan cracked open his eye and closed his hand around the Sig Sauer. Jack was nowhere in sight. He got to his knees, feeling Christy moving beside him. Doc, Mildred, and JB awakened as well, all of them reaching for weapons.
Jack?
Yeah?
Trouble?
Plenty of daylight. Figured you people be up by now.
Ryan pushed through the tent flap, surprised by the brightness and warmth of the sun hanging low in a mass of purple clouds to the east. Startled, he stared at the rapidly melting snow. Tiny threads of water ran everywhere. Steam curled up from the ground, rolling in gentle fogs across the countryside. Christy came up beside Ryan and put her hand in his.
I didn't expect this.
Doc put a hand to his forehead to shade his eyes as he looked around.
It probably has a lot to do with the underlying volcanic activity and the atmospheric conditions in regards to the debris that regularly shoots into the upper stratosphere.
This ground is drenched. There's a good chance we're going to leave a trail wherever we go.
We stick to the rocks so we don't leave tracks.
Go downhill. Maybe melting snow washed away all the tracks.
And maybe we'll end up trying to cross some awfully flooded lands. Up top, we should be able to get a better lay of the terrain. Pick a good spot to cross at instead of being chased into a bad one.
The albino teenager sat, tending the slow cook fire nestled between a ring of rocks he'd evidently placed. He turned a long spit that held four animals that had roasted nicely.
Where'd you get breakfast?
Little animals kept sticking their heads up not far away. I pitched rocks, and I got these.
He poured out a pouch that contained bright red cherry tomatoes and dark purple berries.
Growing wild?
Yep. Color was pretty easy to see this morning against the snow.
Doc hunkered down and picked up one of the tomatoes, which was about the size of his thumb. He rolled the cherry tomato between his fingers, as if savoring the taste by touch. He tilted his head and glanced at Mildred.
Concerning all the volcanic activity and radiation residue, would it be wise to partake of this repast?
Those fruits could be holding in some radioactive waste.
If they do, can't be much. The animal's eating it.
Ryan squatted long enough to pull off a haunch. The roasted animal looked like a ground squirrel of some type, but was the size of a chicken. Surprisingly, there was a fair amount of meat on the bones. He took up a handful of tomatoes and berries. There appeared to be plenty of both. He walked to a nearby outcrop and unlocked his knees until he was in a squatting position that wouldn't allow him to be easily skylined against the mountain. Christy came up behind him, her hands as laden as his. Ryan looked at her, seeing the pinched worry lines over the bridge of her nose as she stared out beyond the pass.
Did you have any bad dreams about Dean?
No. I don't remember dreaming at all. I was so tired. I know I stood watch, stayed awake during the whole time, but I don't remember that too clearly either.
Ryan felt that something was bothering her, but didn't ask. She'd tell him when she was ready. Instead, he scanned the eastern horizon. Christy put an arm across his back and hugged him.
It's been a long time. I need to see him again.
I know. We've all missed him.
I have to ask myself, though, if he's going to be ready to leave the friends he's made at that school and take up this hard traveling life again.
Right at that moment, Dean wished he was anywhere in all of Deathlands except for where he was. He sat in one of the straight-backed chairs outside Nicholas Brody's office, arms crossed over his chest and fidgeting. Jake sat across from him on the small desk where the secretary kept all the records and bits of school business intact and organized. The door opened, and Dean's heart leapt to the back of his throat. Phaedra Lemon stepped into the outer office, wearing the light-colored blouse and denim skirt that were the school's uniform for its female students. Dean's jaw almost dropped. He hadn't expected her there. Nicholas Brody followed her out.
My dear, I certainly appreciate your willingness to involve yourself in reporting this case of scandalous behavior on the part of these young men. Rest assured, then, that I will do my utmost to resolve these conflicts straight away.
Yes, sir.
Phaedra dropped a short curtsy, then turned on her heel and walked to Dean.
I did my best to explain to Mr. Brody that you were only returning an earring of a friend's that I'd lost. I told him I thought it was a most gallant thing to do.
Okay.
Dean gazed at her and blinked. Suddenly hot, he pulled at his shirt collar, thinking it had to have shrunk since he'd put it on that morning. He glanced at Brody. The headmaster stood in the doorway, hands locked behind his back in a familiar pose. His broad face was unreadable. Phaedra left without another word, her vanilla scent lingering after her.
Mr. Cawder, if you would, please.
Brody stepped aside and waved inside his office. Dean pushed himself out of the chair and swallowed hard. Muties or stickies, he thought. A dozen of them, or two dozen, and him armed only with a pea shooter. That would be better than walking into that room. But he went.
JB, look there. Tracks.
JB walked forward, automatically unslinging the S&W M4000 scattergun. Behind the round lenses, his hawk-sharp eyes surveyed the broken terrain. The sun blazed down, growing hotter and melting the snow even more rapidly. Ryan touched the indentation of a boot that had slipped off a shelf of rock and made a J-shape in the soft earth. Then he pointed out the muddy impressions the boot had made along the rocky trail they were following.
Fresh, but whose? The raiders wouldn't be this far, I don't think.
Yeah, me neither. These are maybe less than an hour old. We could find another way. Down there looks like maybe we could cross without getting mired too bad.
That's a pretty wide stretch down there. If any more raiders come up on us suddenly, we could get royally fucked.
We've got to be leaving them behind. They'd have to be flat traveling to match the pace we've set.
Ryan flicked his eye over the rocky shelf. Here and there, there were other mud smears.
Whoever came through here, he wasn't alone.
No, but there couldn't be many of them.
We'll keep on going the way we were. It's the least traceable route. Pass the word.
JB nodded and went back along the trail. Carrion eaters circled lazily in the blue sky, their wings dead still. Ryan chose not to view that as an omen. There were too many around in the Deathlands for it to matter. Nicholas Brody indicated one of the three straight-back chairs in front of his desk.
Have a seat, Mr. Cawder.
Yes, sir.
Brody's brows drew together.
I await elucidation, Mr. Cawder, with a calm demeanor yet a certain sense of purpose.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
Your feelings in this regard are both noted and appreciated. But that in no way begins to clarify how you came to be on that structure.
I climbed, sir.
Of course you climbed. I know very well that you're incapable of sprouting wings like some Icarus. What I endeavor to comprehend is what motivated you to go up there in the first place. Did Miss Lemon invite you up?
Suddenly, Dean felt hot again, his mind preoccupied with the idea that maybe Phaedra was in the habit of asking other boys up to her room, and he didn't know about it. That had to be why Brody asked. The possibility made him angry, for reasons he wasn't certain of. Maybe her explanation of the earring was to clear herself and not him at all. Confusion followed closely on the heels of his anger.
No, sir, she didn't.
She didn't know you were coming?
No, sir.
Dean wondered if Phaedra had asked other boys up to her room on different occasions. Maybe she'd even started the rumor of her sleeping naked herself, just to entice unsuspecting boys to her room so she could push them out windows.
Have I been the only one caught in her room, Mr. Brody?
Why do you ask? Do you know of any other boys who visited Miss Lemon's room after lights out?
No, sir.
Would you lie about that, Mr. Carter?
Excuse me, sir, but if you have to ask that question, my answer's not going to be worth shit.
I remind you about your use of bad language, Mr. Carter.
Sorry, sir.
Dean, I am in a hard way here. If your father was someone local, I could call upon him, seek his advice in this matter. I would not want to see you ostracized from the student body and be rendered a virtual prisoner on these premises. Tell me, young Carter, in your own words, why it was that you scaled that building and transgressed into Miss Lemon's bedroom. Give me something upon which I might build a case for your defense, seeing as how you remain unable to defend your actions yourself.
Dean tried, but the words just wouldn't come out. Just saying he went there because he wondered if Phaedra slept naked sounded totally stoop. He just looked at his hands.
Evidently, Miss Lemon feels some allegiance for you. Otherwise, she'd have been the first clamoring for your head on the proverbial pike. Instead, she marches herself into my office this morning in an effort to clear you. Her explanation of this missing earring is manifestly balderdash. I'm quite certain she realized I believed not a word of it. Yet, why would she defend you?
It wasn't Phaedra's fault we were there. Calgary came to me a couple days ago. He'd done me a good turn, so I owed him. He wanted me to climb up in that dormitory with him, kind of help him along because he couldn't figure a way to do it himself.
And Miss Lemon didn't invite you or young Ventnor into her room?
Mr. Brody, you make a big deal here at the school about fair play and honesty. I'm being honest. I'm sorry I broke your rules. I truly am. Especially if I'm gonna get kicked out over it. But if you're even thinking for a minute about blaming Phaedra for any of this, well then, I don't think my dad knew exactly the place he was leaving me at. If Phaedra gets punished and her not guilty in any of this, I'll have to kick my own self out because I don't want to be a part of no place that does that.
Thank you, Dean, for bringing my responsibility in this matter to the forefront of my mind. And for your forthrightness.
Dean shoved out of the chair and started for the door. He was scared, but he kind of felt good, all at the same time. Christy fell into step beside Doc as they moved cautiously in the direction Ryan set.
Doc? You and I have talked about my powers before.
At length, upon occasion. As I recall, I have evidenced more real curiosity about your abilities than you yourself. You have always appeared predisposed to accept them on faith.
That's true.
She gazed ahead, spotting Ryan walking point. JB strung out behind him, 100 yards at right flank. Watching Ryan, so far away from her if something happened, made a chill run down Christy's spine.
I assume you have not brought up the subject simply for the prospect of idle conversation.
Everything I tell you, Doc, you can't tell Ryan.
That man is savagely keen, dear lady. Mayhap he'll learn just as much from what I omit as he would from what I told him.
That's the way it has to be. to protect him. Maybe Dean as well.
You're sure?
Christy reached out and took Doc's hand briefly, squeezing it to reassure him as much as herself.
I had a vision in the helicopter of Ryan and Dean, of danger. There was a woman talking to me, but I don't know who she is. She said I couldn't tell Ryan anything about this, or he and Dean could both die. You believe in my powers, don't you, Doc?
Believe in them, my dear, without a doubt. My ability to understand them is lacking, though there were definite experimental studies being done within the totality concept, based loosely on scientific research. I never got too close to them. Speculation you cannot adequately quantify is something I never took to very much.
I have a theory.
That, my dear Christy, is a phrase every scientist loves to hear. For with the existence of such a hypothesis, a catalyst may be introduced whereby events may be suitably weighed and measured. Of course, it is possible that your theory will be disproved, putting you squarely back where you started.
I have to ask myself a couple of things. First, I have to ask myself if seeing them maybe kill each other in that place was the only event that vision really showed me.
What do you mean?
Suppose I saw them, but I couldn't do a thing about it. I couldn't stop it. Suppose my mind couldn't handle seeing such a thing and just created the parts where I went to them and talked to them.
Ah, my dear, you have truly twisted this puzzle. Was the whole event a fabrication, or were parts of it? If so, which parts?
Doc, you make it sound even worse. So, it could be that Ryan and Dean are going to face off against each other, the one never knowing the other was there, and maybe kill one or both.
Or, possibly, you have managed to intervene in some fashion, or will.
It's just as possible, though, that the reason I won't be at Ryan's side when this happens later is because I can't be. Just as possible that I could be chilled by then and no help to him at all.
I shall make you a promise, my dear. As long as I yet live, nothing shall harm you until we see the truth of this vision. I shall become your shield and buckler, and may all that remains holy in this accursed land keep my strength unflagging.
You're a good friend, Doc.
The only thing that warned Ryan that the sniper had a bead on him was the glint of sunlight against glass.
Down!
Right where he'd been standing, the round smashed a misshapen rock the size of a pumpkin into fragments.
Fire blast!
The second bullet clipped a fist-sized chunk from Ryan's cover and sent stone slivers stinging into his face. Sinking back behind the rock, he looked back to his team.
JB, do you know where he's at?
Got a perch up there about 400 yards away at 11 o'clock.
Anybody hit?
Nope.
No.
I'm fine.
No,
I'm okay.
Slithering around the rock, Ryan went lower, staying on his belly against the icy stone. Peering around the corner of his cover, he studied the horizon. Another glint sparked like white fire ahead. Ryan moved his head back, an instant before another heavy bullet cracked against the rock he hid behind. He readied the Steyr, adjusting for the distance.
Hey, JB, that bastard must be up there with a damn cannon.
Unless I miss my guess, that's a Sharps 50 cal Buffalo rifle. Clean kills possible out to 1,000 yards in the hands of someone who knows their business.
On the other side of his cover, Ryan dropped the Steyr against his shoulder and squeezed off two quick rounds to give the sniper something to think about. Ryan rolled behind cover again and looked back along the mountainside. Below and to his left, nearly 70 yards away, treetops scrubbed against the side of the defile. The mountain ridge to the right promised only more heights, with not much in the way of protective cover.
Hey, you! Stop shooting!
Fuck you! You didn't seem to have a problem shooting at us!
Us meant more than one, Ryan realized. He wondered exactly how many more.
That's because you shot first! Just wanted you to know, we could do this the easy way or the hard way.
You people just hold your position. You will not be allowed to reach a greater proximity. Go back the way you came.
Can't do that.
That will be your preference, but I assure you, that inclination will categorically lead only to your demise.
Talks like Doc.
Do you see him?
No. He's got himself set in good. Got more sense than to move, either. Bullets come kind of slow. That Sharps is a breech loader. One round at a time at that.
If we give him multiple targets, he's going to be hard up against it trying to get us all.
Ryan scanned the terrain for the albino teenager, who was nowhere to be seen.
Check.
A pebble thudded against Ryan's right arm. He turned in that direction and barely made out the youth lying like a second layer of dirty snow over the stone shelf, a little more than 10 yards away.
If I give them a target, do you think you can get up in there behind them without being seen?
Daylight make it hard. Maybe. Drop into the trees could get around.
JB, when I go left, you break right. You get somewhere safe, bang a couple of rounds at them to let them know we're still knocking at the door.
JB nodded. Ryan speared a last glance at Jack, then pushed himself up from the ground and ran. He dove behind a low hill of fresh broken earth, then kicked his feet, pushing up flush against the earthen ridge. He pulled the Steyr to his shoulder and fired 2 rounds at the sniper's perch. Then he was running again. Jack had already disappeared. JB snapped off a few rounds with his Uzi, splattering the rocks around the unseen gunman, and Ryan bolted closer. Jack contemplated how best to climb the narrow chimney of rock to where the sniper hid. The climb through the tops of the trees at the edge of the cliff face had been simple compared to the vertical challenge in front of him. The rock chimney stood almost 40 feet up, looking like some kind of turret on a castle he'd once seen in a child's faded fairy tale book. A trail curled behind it like a dog's tail wrapped around itself. Jack stood at its base. He unlaced his boots and slid them off. He flexed his toes as he tested the chimney for his first handhold, then took one of his leaf-bladed throwing knives and placed it between his teeth. Leaning into the rock and digging his fingers and toes into the cracks and crevices, he started up. Ryan raked his gaze across the sniper's position through the Steyr's scope. The crosshair settled comfortably between Jack's shoulder blades, 30 feet up the sheer wall under the overhang. JB punched fresh bullets into the Uzi's magazine.
JB, I see Jack. Do you?
Yeah. Gonna have to be careful and not hit him.
If we stop coming in on the sniper, he's gonna know something's wrong.
True, but if Jack runs into trouble, we're not gonna do him much good way the hell out here.
When he gets to the top of those rocks, I'm gonna rush him. If Jack has a real fighter in his hands, you take out whoever you see on that ridgeline and leave Jack free.
Sure.
Ryan readied himself, ignoring the cramp in his left calf that came from the constant dodging and powering into sprints.
Go.
JB opened up with the Uzi. Even as the machine pistol belched an angry snarl of death, Ryan shoved himself from behind cover and ran. Clinging to the side of the chimney rock, Jack saw the long barrel of the Sharps buffalo rifle stick out over the lip of the ledge. It was still beyond his reach. Sweat from his efforts and the residual humidity in the air drenched his clothing. His arms and legs trembled slightly with the constant strain he'd expended climbing. He eased his weight around, searching for a foothold, and found it. He shoved himself up, gaining nearly 2 feet this time. The barrel of the Sharps nosed over the lip of rock above him. Just as he was getting ready to shift his weight again, the irregular notch of stone he clasped in his left hand gave way. Bits of rock tumbled down the side of the stone chimney. Swinging wildly for just a moment, Jack stared helplessly at the ground nearly 40 feet below, hanging by his other hand as first one foot, then the other slid free. An effort of iron-willed determination kept the fingers of his right hand in place, supporting all his weight. Slowly and in agony, Jack pulled himself back into place. Once his feet were on firm footing again, he pushed himself upward. Fire burned through his limbs and back. Bullets from Ryan's Steyr slammed into the rock beside the sniper's position, stone splinters raining in a sudden hail. Jack narrowed his eyes against it and kept moving. As the big 50-caliber rifle pulled back and the breech opened, he shoved himself onto the ledge. He caught Ryan's sudden breakneck run from the corner of his eye. Saliva leaked down over his chin from carrying the knife, cool in the winds that rushed over the chimney top. The man with the Sharps rifle spotted him first.
Burnson.
He was a scraggly old man who looked as if he'd been worn whipcord tough by a hard, adventurous life. His gray beard was tangled, and his silver hair was pulled back in a weedy ponytail. He wore hiking boots, jeans, and a black and red checked flannel shirt that had the sleeves rolled up enough to reveal the same orange and blue tattoo on his inner forearm that had been on the dead man. He fumbled, trying to insert another cartridge into the Sharps.
Get down, Hoyle!
The other man was a few years younger than his companion, broader built and soft. A paunch hung over his belt, and he didn't seem certain of the long-barreled Dan Wesson 41 caliber Magnum he held in both hands. Jack slipped the leaf-bladed knife from his teeth and flipped it at the man. With the reflexes of a frightened rabbit, Burnson managed to dodge it. Terrified, he scrambled to get behind his partner. Pulling another knife from the top of his boot, Jack leapt at Hoyle and battered away the barrel of the sharps with his free arm. Jack shouldered Hoyle in the stomach, hard enough to knock him off balance, then stepped in behind him and seized his ponytail. Burnson tracked them with the .41 Magnum held in shaking hands.
Get down, Hoyle! You're in the way! Give me a clean shot!
Hoyle struggled to get away, but Jack brought the knife to the man's throat, yanking back on the ponytail to bear it even further. The keen edge lay over the jugular.
Stop or die!
Jack nicked Hoyle's neck with the blade to emphasize his point. Three bloody tears wept from the small incision and trickled down the man's sweaty neck. Instead of putting his gun down, Burnson took aim. Ryan found the trail behind the chimney rock and threw himself into an assault on the steep downgrade. Keeping the stire across his chest, his attention divided between the loose stones under his feet and the narrow corkscrew leading up into the chimney rock, he ran as hard as he could. Ryan came around the corner in time to see a heavy man taking aim. Bringing up the stire, Ryan fired four quick rounds, spacing them in an uneven line only inches above the gunholder's head. The fat man dropped his gun like it was hot.
Don't! Please don't hurt me anymore!
Ryan picked up the revolver and stuck it inside his belt. Two backpacks with aluminum frames leaned against the stone wall, out of sight beyond the ledge.
Stay put!
Keeping his hands high, the man nodded. Ryan looked at Jack, who let his captive go.
Hoyle, that one's Burnson.
Jack leaned down and picked up the sharps. Ryan stepped to the ledge overlooking the mountainside and waved to Christy, Doc, and Mildred. Immediately, the three began to move up. Ryan squinted at a sudden movement about 30 yards behind Christy's position, nearly in rifle range.
Shit, I knew they wouldn't give up. Raider scum.
The companions had lost whatever edge mobility had given them in the long minutes they'd spent being pinned down by sniper fire. Ryan turned back. Jack had his .357 Magnum in hand as he waved Hoyle into place beside Burnson. Reluctantly, the bearded man sat.
Up to you now if you live or die. Me, I don't much care. Easier to chill you than watch you. Jack, if they try anything, chill them both. Then push them over the edge and let the vultures have them.
Okay.
I'm going to take a look around and be back in a couple of minutes.
Simply outrunning the raiders was no longer an option. Ryan started up the grade at the back of the chimney rock. It was clear to him that the way had been trod by humans before. He figured their new guests could tell him a thing or two about it. Following a curve around a stone outcropping, Ryan stopped short as he noticed an entrance to a cave. He gazed down the long dark throat of the tunnel, unable to see how deep it went.
Incoming!
Fire blast!
Ryan turned and hurried down the steep path that had led him to the cave. The companions were spread across the crest of the chimney rock, seeking cover where they could find it. The armorer had taken up the Sharp's buffalo rifle. Black smoke wafted up from somewhere below the edge of the rock. Ryan threw himself down beside JB and brought the stire forward.
The raiders set up a mortar.
JB pulled the butt of the Sharp's into his shoulder. The original peep sight had been replaced with a telescopic lens. JB fitted himself into the eyepiece.
We can't hold this position. I found a cave back there.
Any idea where it goes?
I was figuring on asking our company.
Ryan crept back to the prisoners, staying low, and stopped in front of Hoyle. Burnson kept his arms wrapped over his head and trembled piteously. Doc kept cautious watch with his Lama.
The cave. That's where you were headed.
Hoyle hesitated, his lower lip pinched tight against his teeth.
Talk! Either way it goes, we got no choice but that cave. If you hold back on me, I'll dangle you over the edge of this rock and drop you down to those raiders. If you get lucky, maybe you'll connect with a mortar round before you hit bottom.
We were going to the cave. There's a river down below. Runs underground for a time.
And why try to chill us?
We checked earlier. River was too high to try. We were waiting for it to go down. We got a raft down there.
Jack, Christy, you two take point. Double yellow. I didn't hear anything, but that doesn't mean it's clear. Doc, give me a hand with the prisoners. JB, Mildred, you've got our backs.
Ryan grabbed the shoulder of Hoyle's jacket and hoisted the man to his feet. Together, the group moved toward the cave. Before they reached it, another mortar round slammed against the chimney rock, nearly a dozen feet above their heads. A great tumble of split stone came slithering free, scattering across the rocky shelf under their feet, nearly knocking them to the ground.
Move!
Jack and Christy vanished into the gaping maw of the cave. Ryan hustled Hoyle inside. Ryan saw Mildred standing ready, the Czech target weapon held securely in both her hands, but JB drew her into the crook of one arm and started her toward the cave.
Shit! They're closer than we thought!
As JB and Mildred raced into the cave, Ryan fired his stun across the top of the rocks the raiders were using for cover. Their pursuers ducked into hiding and remained there. JB unbuckled the Smith & Wesson M4000 scattergun from his back and tossed it to Ryan.
Close quarters like this, if those raiders try shoving into the cave, it'll be just like a grin going off in their faces.
Ryan raked his vision across the dark inner recesses of the cave until he spotted Hoyle. Doc was moving Burnson along at a fair clip.
Go!
The trail leading down into the cave was twisting and narrow, and the temperature started to drop rapidly. Ryan squinted in the dimness as he approached the subterranean river. The rock floor ahead split, with a raging torrent gushing from an underground schism. Water twisted and spilled over the rock ledges on either side of the river, making the way chancy. Ryan couldn't see Jack, Christy, Doc, or Burnson, but glancing over his shoulder, he saw Mildred and JB working their way after him.
Hoyle! How much farther to the raft?
20 yards, maybe. Hard to tell in this.
Gunfire flashed near the mouth of the cave. The six men standing in front of it were skylined by the sunlight beyond, broken shadows against the darker and deeper silhouettes of rock. JB cut loose with the Uzi, causing them to jump back. Ahead, Hoyle disappeared around a turn in the tunnel. Ryan pressed in close against the rock and followed. Around the corner, the path submerged and water swirled up to his knees. Jack, Doc, Burnson, and Christy clung to the wall as they inched along. Jagged fangs thrust down from the rooftop, closing the cave up. Scarcely 4 feet remained above the surface of the churning river. The black water spread across 30 or 40 feet of the cave opening, well out of the regular channel it had carved over decades. Ryan realized that the way the waves crashed against the walls and then swirled madly back in on themselves, the water was getting dramatically deeper. The shaft where the river continued was 8 or 10 feet across.
Dark night!
Has it gone down? Only a crazy fucker would try to go down that river in the shape it's in.
Where's the raft?
You can't be serious! We'd all die!
If we stay here, we're dead for sure. With a raft, maybe we got some kind of chance. That water's going somewhere, bastard quick. Now get the raft. Otherwise, I break both your knees with a rock and toss you in the river.
Hoyle shuddered before peering at the cave walls to get his bearings. He made his way carefully along the ledge to a spot where a triangle of rocky spikes jutted from the wall.
Over here! Hal needs some help!
He put his hands on either side of the area around the three rocks and started to pull. Ryan stepped forward and added his own muscle to the effort. A section of rock came out slowly.
Hiding place for emergency rations and our gear. We've used this river before.
You didn't come up it.
No, usually we use it to go down. Sometimes we can travel 2, maybe 3 days by river. A lot faster and easier than going over land.
Block of stone came out faster at the end, nearly tumbling Ryan off balance. Dropping the heavy weight into the water, he stepped back as Hoyle reached into the opening and dragged out an olive oval of thick plastic and vinyl.
Ryan!
Even as Ryan turned to look, bullets lanced into the whirling cauldron of water filling the basin. At least 2 men clung to the ledge above them, shooting blindly down into the water in an effort to take out their targets. JB triggered 2 3-round bursts at the men, but they'd moved back into the rock and made difficult targets. Ryan raised the SNW shotgun to his shoulder and squeezed the trigger. When Ryan looked back toward his companions, he saw Hoyle reach into the center of the oval and yank on something. As he withdrew his hand, the oval started to unfold on its own. The raft flopped and expanded. Its dimensions became clearer. It would be a tight fit, but Ryan thought they would all squeeze in. The way he figured it, if things got too tight, their prisoners were ballast. Ryan eyed the rising water level. There was precious little more than 3 feet beneath the cavern ceiling, where it plunged through the orifice leading out of the basin. From the looks of things, the water was going to fill all the space within minutes. Ryan took a length of rope from his pack and sliced off a 10-foot piece with the punga. Working quickly, Ryan tied one end of the section of rope to a loop on the raft. Checking the wall at his side, he found a notched rock and tied off the other end of the rope. He cut off another 10-foot length and passed it to Jack.
Jack, When we start loading people into that raft, we're not going to be able to hold it. This way we can keep it steady until we're prepared. Tie your side. We'll be able to cut it away.
Jack tied the rope onto the raft. In seconds, the raft was as stable as they could make it. The vinyl craft jumped on the water, now at least a couple inches higher, and pulled at the tethers.
Okay, one at a time, get on the raft.
The companions and their two captives loaded into the raft. Ryan pulled himself into the tangle and press of bodies, just as a small knot of raiders took up a line along the ledge leading down to the basin. A spark flared in the hands of one, then caught, and became a miniature crimson star that flew off a spitting pink light to quickly fill the tidal cavern.
Flare!
The raiders brought their weapons to bear. Ryan ripped the panga from its sheath and grabbed the forward lip of the raft, hauling himself over Hoyle.
Jack, cut away!
In an eye blink, Jack had one of the leaf-shaped throwing knives in his hand, the keen edge sliding through the stabilizing rope at the side of the raft. Immediately, the craft jumped, like a fish hitting the end of a line after a long run. The raider's bullet speared into the water, getting closer. Ryan slashed his rope with the panga. Off balance aboard the writhing raft, there was no time to brace himself against the sudden lunge the raft took. Christy grabbed hold of his belt and added her weight to his.
Hold on!
The river took them, shoving them at the bottleneck.
Whoa!
Hang on!
Ryan grabbed one of the tie-downs and threw an arm across Christy's shoulders, pulling her close to him. There was nothing else any of them could do. Twisting suddenly, the raft plunged down the dark throat of the tunnel. The light of the flare and the malice of the raiders vanished from sight of mind. Abruptly, a light flared into life at the front of the raft as Jack swung the flashlight he freed from his gear downriver. Ryan shifted a little, rising but not getting too close to the low ceiling of rock as they raced on. The raft continued to bob and jump, following the irregular path of the tunnel. Jack held the flashlight, shifting it to illuminate the way.
How far before we slow down?
Don't know! I never got on the water when it was like this!
The tunnel took another twist, and the jagged ceiling got closer. The raft swung sideways slowly in the current, pulled faster still by the river. For a moment, it looked as if the river channel was widening and deepening. Then, the blank wall rose before them without warning. The water smashed up against it, cresting 6 or 7 feet to the broken stalactites above it.
Oh, shit!
Then, there was no more time. Ryan buried himself in the raft, drawing Christy down with him. The water wasn't filling the chamber. It was being drawn away completely underground. The raft smashed into the wall, knocking everyone into the water. Struggling against the current and the sagging raft, Ryan fought to hold on to Christy.
Let go! We'll drown!
She was right. There was no way to stay together in the deluge. He squeezed her hand, then released her. The undertow reached out and yanked him under. The chill of the river coiled around him, filling his senses with a rush of confusion. The icy current pulled him deeper still. The water picked up speed, shooting him through the airless dark. He covered his head with his arms, hoping that he didn't go up against the tunnel's side.